Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Sikim Gabadeli. Thank you so much for making the time. Tackling your questions in studio tonight, Bright Kumalo from Vestact and Ian Cruikshanks from the SAIRR. Don't forget to send those questions through to us via SMS to 41392. You can also email stockwatch at bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thank you so much for making the time on this quiet day, given that it's been Independence Day in the United States. So I suppose we have some time to kind of look at the broader picture.
Have pictures of stars and stripes and eating hamburgers.
Exactly, have hamburgers and be wearing white as well on this day. But when you look at what's been happening over the past couple of days, it's really been about the bond market and expectations around interest rates, hasn't it?
So bond rates come down in anticipation of shorter term rates coming down, cheaper funding, cheaper credit, and the game is on again for equities. But I don't see it lasting. I'm very nervous about this development. And looking at the negative rates there are places like Germany and Switzerland.
I just Italy feel, as of recently as well.
I just feel it's going to end in tears. It's not sustainable. It's like three-digit PE ratios. They're not sustainable.
But it looks like everyone is pushing for this. You know, everyone was excited by the Christine Lagarde's nomination, for example, yesterday, saying she
were they?
Yeah, yes. They were saying she's going to keep the taps open. So one's got to wonder
why people are trying to push. Like this,
yeah. This just does not. Do you think? Do you agree with Ian that it's possibly not sustainable?
Hey, look, I wish I had a crystal ball as well. I could tell you what's going to happen tomorrow, but probably after I put my stock picks, right?
Yeah,
create my portfolios. But, I mean, the traditional economics that we've learned in school, you know, all of that is gone like because the things that I'm seeing right now in the real world, I don't understand half of them, unfortunately, especially in the economics front, which is apparently meant to be the science
logical,
that we're using,
science.
Right?
Yeah.
But don't real world rules have to come into effect in due course?
Exactly. The thing is, in academics, right? Everything is, you know, the real world. But in the real world, the academics is not the real world.
Yeah.
So that's the problem. So when you get here, you learn on the go.
But and one gets the sense that, you know, we are in that on the one hand, and on the other hand, phase of what the current economics plus market reaction to it is. How does then an investor make sense of this climate?
Look beyond the noise. Stick to traditional, you know, investment strategies that have worked in the past. That most importantly, that you can relate to. So, you know, the portfolio that you can sleep at night knowing you hold, especially during times of turmoil. If you believe in it, you understand it, it makes sense to you, and you can sleep at night, stick to that.
Okay, so ignore the daily noise, you'd agree?
Yes, I do definitely agree. I'm a great believer in taking a long-term strategic view, and I think that's all important. And if you do that and you look at the US economy slowing, look at rates of growth in many other economies slowing, then one doesn't want to get too overly invested right now.
All right. Well, there's been some corporate action, corporate news. Afrimat had the story out yesterday, pulling out of that particular sale. And at the same time, I think they were up again. Yesterday they were up about just over 5%. They were up again another 8 or so on the day again today. What's your view on that?
So the market is telling you that, you know, this deal was obviously overpriced. I mean, management came and said, you know, the if it's not priced right, especially in this market, they're not going to do it. And also, who's still excited about coal?
It's dirty, isn't it?
No, it's not about it being dirty. You know, if the price is right,
yeah,
there's a price for everything. But if it's management said the price is not right, I commend management for actually saying, look, I'm not going to impress my spouse here. I'm not going to buy this thing. and quite frankly, now the market is cheering that. So sure. I'm happy that's what's happening.
And if you look at what's happened to the share price in the last month or so, up by 10% on the basis of a deal that hasn't been done.
Yeah,
I think that's some credit to Afrimat's management.
Yep.
It's not a reason to buy the stock, though.
Another one considering a deal is Quilter. They're considering selling their old Mutual Wealth Life Assurance unit as well.
Phew, that group has had so much sorting out. Perhaps it's as well that they avoid what they proved to be not very good at. Stick to insurance, basic insurance products.
Yeah.
The more they've diversified, the more problems they've attracted to themselves. So perhaps it is a sensible idea to move that sector on a bit.
Okay.
Yeah, be skeptical of companies that go around, you know, with a mandate of just growth at any price. And this is a perfect example, right, where many moons ago, 2002 or 2001, they went outside of South Africa to look for growth and bought businesses, you know, at lofty multiples. And unfortunately, you know, the chickens are here and they're roosting, unfortunately. And they've created no shareholder value in that period, except now when they're actually offloading those things. All of that growth that they were meant to get by augmenting these businesses, they never saved any cost. They never got any of those, you know, those fancy words they use when they're buying a business.
Yeah.
None of that has happened, unfortunately.
And actually, that's been a bit of a theme this week. We saw what happened with the retailers, with Truworths earlier as well.
Yes. Yes.
And Office,
yes.
All of that. So that theme of the... We were excited a few years ago about our companies going outside.
We were not excited particularly about Truworths.
No, not Truworths itself, we're excited about companies going outside of the country and, you know, expanding beyond our little pond. But for some of them, these chickens have been coming home to roost.
Look, Mr. Price is a perfect example, right? Yeah. This little pond of ours works, and it works for a reason, right? Stick to what you probably know until there's literally a good idea at the correct price. And I mean, I say these things, I'm sitting here like it's very easy. Patience is hard when you have cash, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you know yourself, you go out at night, you've got 5,000 rands in your pockets, and you start seeing stuff, you know?
Yeah.
You just want to buy
you
stuff.
You spend the 5,000.
It's exactly like that when you run a big
business.
Catch up
with him, he's got 5,000 rands in his pocket.
Exactly. So you want to go around with 5,000 rands in your pockets like you've got 2 rands, right? You look at stuff, you're like, I don't need it, moving on. Yes. Exactly. Until you get something that's worth it. The price, right?
Yeah.
Or even better, it's cheaper than what you expect it to be.
I agree with that. And at times when the market has got high, valuations are high, there's no reason to be in a hurry to buy anything at all, unless it really justifies it on worthwhile multiples. There aren't many of those around at the moment.
Yeah. All right, here's some questions. Here's one from Sharon. The panel's view on the gold and platinum stocks, please.
Look what they've done this year. Wow, you know, up by 50% for the gold sector. But gold, one must always remember, is not an investment medium. It's a trading medium.
Yeah.
And if one is then prepared to watch it every day, to take a view and be prepared to reverse it in over a very short term, that's okay. But it is, however, a sign of the indecision there is regarding views on the market as a whole and the uncertainty. And markets, as a rule, hate uncertainty more than anything else. It does make me nervous when I see the gold price going up like this. Would I follow it?
Yeah.
No, thank you. My risk doesn't go up that far.
Okay, so would it? So in that case, if you're looking at it as a trading instrument, should you not then go rather for the physical metal rather than the companies themselves?
If one feels compelled to have a stake, yes. But, you know, there's no compulsion. And when it comes, you mentioned platinum. Platinum is still in oversupply, so maybe that is why we now see it down at $900 a ton, an ounce. Goodness me! And I think that really it's going to be a couple of years before there's a compelling argument. And with the move to electric cars, there's less of an argument.
All right. Robert says, dear Siki, does the panel have any idea why EOH went up 13% today in not very heavy trading volume?
Sour grapes, yeah. So the grapes that I can't reach up the top of the tree, they're sour. Not interested.
Why?
Yeah, it's just not in my radar right now. It's still the same story of growing by acquisition and then falling at that space because you accumulate a lot of debts, you know, and then it's a mania going up and it's a mania going down.
And even if they continue cleaning house as they claim they are?
I don't care. Quite frankly, I don't care. You know, if you have to convince me that your house is clean, it should have been clean in the first place, that's too late.
Then I'm going to stay on the other side.
I'm interested.
You know, there's that old expression, give a dog a bad name and you might as well kill it. And I'm afraid that it is going to take a heck of a long time to recover this. Rather look at some area where you don't need to clean house first, where you get to buy a clean house.
All right. Question on Rebosis. I hold 200,000 shares of Rebosis that I bought during the good days. Should I sell now at 69 cents or hold on?
Well, that person is braver than me, right? They must just go back to first principles. Why did you buy it in the first place? Why did, was it for the income? Was it for the capital appreciation? And if, you know, your little... what does Charlie Munger call it? Your checklist is, you know, doesn't meet some of the criteria on your checklist. Probably it's time to move on.
Okay,
Rebosis. Yes, just take what you can, pocket it, and start again. I quite agree.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a question from Bernard, who says, could the panel discuss the pros and cons of investing in Redefine?
I think it's a sector which can be avoided for the foreseeable future. There's more property in their area, more property available, and they've got an oversupply, they're having to cut rentals. The CEO of one of the big property companies said they would give away a month's rental for each year in which for a forward contract. So if you sign up for 3 years, you can get 3 months free rental.
Wow.
Now, yes, that is very wild. That just says, hey, it's a tough area to be in. There's no reason to be in it.
And I suppose one just has to walk through our office parks, walk through our shopping centres often to see the lease signs and the for sale signs as well.
And these new buildings are hugely impressive. But what's happening to where they came from? There's going to be a lot of space available soon.
Okay. Property?
Yeah, in the wise words of Charlie Munger, I've got nothing to add.
We're taking your questions on 34314 92. You can send those through to us also via SMS. Another question about your views on investing in Russia. Let's talk a little bit about offshore outside Russia. Of South Africa. Yeah, Moscow Exchange. This person says the Moscow Exchange has grown its revenues 15.5%. annually in local currency terms, I assume that's the ruble, despite its formidable competitive positioning and its enviable track record, it trades at valuation multiples that are lower than all other publicly traded exchanges. Further, the company pays nearly all of its net income out as dividends to shareholders.
Yeah.
It's a convincing story, but I have no background to it at all.
On Moscow, yeah. I don't know much about the Russian market, but
you know, in the chase for global alpha, you know, some cheap countries, you know, they're usually cheap for a reason. I mean, I follow a lot of guys who do a lot of global alpha stuff, like Meb Faber and, you know, the guys at AQR, Cliff Asness, and they're not really excited about Russia. Yeah. They're more excited about South Africa than Russia and Turkey, for example. So that tells you
it
a story.
Sums it up.
Exactly. And not Argentina, not Venezuela, you know. So in that space, you do more by avoiding the losers than actually chasing the winners.
And I imagine that there are options, as you say, besides plenty of them.
China.
To chase that.
There's an old stock exchange saying that says, when in doubt, stay out. This is a stay out and stay away, I think.
All right. We're going to take more of your questions. Keep sending them through to via SMS to 41392. You can also email us, stockwatch@bdtv.co.za. We're back in a moment. Welcome back. Let's take a quick look now at international markets. And we have a quick look in Europe because, of course, the US closed today for Independence Day holiday. So those markets a little flat on the day. Volumes were quite thin. The focus has been, as we said earlier on the show, on bond yields. And there have been bets that the Fed would cut interest rates this month and that other major central banks would also embrace looser monetary policy. And you can see that reflected in the developments over the past few days on international markets. Still with me in studio, Bright Kumalo from Vestact and Ian Cruikshanks from SAIR. Thank you again for joining us. A question from Franco wants to know about Naspers. What do you think about Naspers?
I think, look, they've got one major investment. It has proved to be a winner. One's got to have a view on that. But the move towards diversification and trying to have an alternative revenue streams is a good one. And I think if one has it, one should have some. Any well-balanced portfolio in South Africa has to have a stake in Naspers. It's just such a big part of the market.
Mm. And what do you think of their listing offshore at this point and what it means for local investors?
Mm. Get some protection in that case.
Okay. Your view on Naspers?
Two thumbs up. Okay. I mean, we're hoping to see a lot of value unlock. Yes. I don't think it's going to be as big as people expect it to be, but there will be some value unlock there. I was actually looking at Uber Eats results this morning. Impressive, you know, growth of like 89%. But obviously, Naspers doesn't really have a stake in Uber Eats. They got a stake in Deliveroo.
Yeah.
So at the same time, I got to see the results of Deliveroo. That space is doing exceptionally well for Naspers, and they're still investing more in China and in Europe in the same space of, you know, food delivery. So that's the next big thing, it seems.
Will there still be value in the South African operations, do you think, post this?
Well, they've just put
Putimayo
as the CEO of South Africa, and obviously, most importantly, I think to run those two funds with the Naspers Labs and the other venture capital funds. So it's going to be interesting what's going to come out of that, you know, Silicon Cape or South African technology space. I'm very excited, but I don't think it's going to be as big as, for example, say, Tencent. You know, Tencent already was trying new things as a copycat back in the early 2000s in a market that had 2 billion people.
Mm.
So here we've got, you know, 56 million people. It can only get so exciting.
Yeah, the playground is only that.
Exactly.
That
I mean, okay, if we include the whole of Africa, it gets a bit
then
more
it's
exciting.
A different story, yeah.
Yes, but we have to start somewhere. So it's a long-term story. It's a long-term play. So have patience. And I'm very young, so I've got about 40, 50 years of runway. So I'm liking something like this, okay. Especially when I see it, yeah.
A question for you, Ian, on interest rates. Do you think that we would see a rate cut here in South Africa, and which shares would be most affected?
Yes, we don't know when.
Yes.
We're crossing our fingers and hoping. Everyone's begging for it. But
yes, and you know, all the pressures are going to be very much on it.
Yeah.
Certainly to stimulate the economy, political pressure and so on. But what he also says, one restraining factor that I think is important is the fact that we rely very much on foreign portfolio flows to offset the twin deficits, the budget deficit and the current account deficit. And if we start bringing our rates down, we cannot move them quicker than the rest of the world. Otherwise, we could find ourselves losing some of that capital inflow, which is so precious, precious to us. So, yes, but it doesn't. It'll be later rather than sooner, and it may not be quite as much as is expected.
And we want that a little bit, because if we're going to see rate cuts in the rest of the world, we want to continue to benefit from that carry trade.
They have some radical ideas out there. I've been reading. Obviously, I read both sides, left and right. So some people are like, you know, it's time to put South Africa first. It's time to, you know, do something about us and worry less about those, you know, flows that you talk about, which aren't really like investments into the country.
It's hot money.
Exactly. It's hot money. It's all in the air, and it doesn't benefit anyone except those people who are basically trading against themselves. So that's the argument. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just posing the argument for you to think about it when you get home. Yeah.
Here's someone who says, which shares would be most affected if quantitative easing is introduced by the SARB?
Sure. Companies with big borrowings. All with big expansion plans. There's not many of those around at the moment.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you know, to sum it up, interest rate sensitive companies. And one just has to look at that position. With a lot of our companies being cash rich at the moment, it may be harder to find those of real value.
Okay. You'd agree? Okay. Question on Omnia. Roger says, does anyone on the panel expect Omnia to recover from its current lows?
What's the time flow?
I was about to say, give me the time frame. Give me the runway.
Yes.
How much runway do you think they need?
Look, you know, not everything goes to zero, and not everything, you know, grows to the sky. Trees don't grow to the sky.
Yeah.
So given enough time, long enough time frame, they probably will recover. Just don't know when.
Yeah.
I know it's a fluffy answer, but unfortunately, it is what it is. I'll avoid it, in other words.
Okay, so that's the bottom line. Sure. Stay away until... Because look at that trajectory as well on that chart. Capitec Ask the panel's view on Capitec share price as a potential short, given entrance of new low-cost banks and the state of South Africa.
I've heard so
economy.
Many people say, Capitec is too expensive, we've got to short it. They have all come to grief, it's just a matter of timing. So they've proven they've got best management in the sector, and that should guide them, you know, should guide their results, and I think it'll enable them to have technology which will keep abreast or maybe even still ahead of any newcomers that come in.
Instead of Capitec, should they be worrying about the other more chunkier or hectier banks? Than
I don't even think so. But anyways, I'm going to comment on the Capitec first. So on the Capitec story, there's a fund manager down in Cape Town which manages over 250 billion rands. If you go to their reception, one of the things written at the top there, it says, rule number one, don't short Capitec. So I've learned from that by seeing that.
Yeah.
And on talking about the big banks, so the top five, including Capitec, in terms of actually losing out to the new entrances, yes, they'll probably lose out. But if you look at the most recent report from, was it Safri, whatever, I forgot their name, it's basically saying that the market share of local banks, the top five, actually has increased from like 91% to 93%. So it's actually going the right way, not the wrong way as you'd expect it. So it's going to happen, yes. It's a matter of time frame. How long is it going to take? I mean, we've seen it happen, especially in the UK. I know I always go back to the UK because that's the market I know. We've got Monzo there and all of these banks that came out of the sandpit there and came into become, you know, banks that have survived and the increasing, you know, the clients there, and Monzo having 2 million and growing, and now they're growing in Australia, parts of Asia and in the US. So now you can get your Monzo card in those countries. It's exciting. It makes sense. It's swift. You can do transaction within, you know, three swipes, and you can use your iPhone to actually tap and go instead of having your card all the time. It's exciting technology. It's amazing. It works. But it only has worked for especially the UK because of the financial crisis.
Yeah.
So when there's a crisis, people remember that banks are not to be trusted, and then they find alternatives. Right now, no one is looking for an alternative, especially the rich people.
And also look at the makeup of the South African economy, the Capitec and who they've targeted, and they understand that market.
Clever market.
Very well.
Yes. Yeah. I think also, you know, looking at, for example, TymeBank and who they actually, their target market is, they're actually targeting Capitec's market. So I'd say in the long term, Capitec is more vulnerable than the bigger banks, whereas Discovery already has a high net worth network of over 300,000 people that they're just going to move from FNB system to their systems, and they'll need about a similar amount to break even, and that's easy when you're working with, you know, high net worth individuals.
Yeah.
So the rest of the market is very hard to penetrate.
All right. We're going to get very in a moment to our stock picks, but a question on very quick question on Altron. If you think Altron is on the way up,
it's you know, proven management.
Yeah.
The new CEO has really been doing the right things, but we've seen the action. It's, you know, it's almost doubled in the last 2 years. I think the big recovery has been made. It's got right board with the right management, with the right strategy. They've sold off the non-performing parts of their company, and I think it's if you don't have it, maybe it's a small buy. If you have it, stick to it.
Okay.
It sounds like a Transformer, Megatron, Ultron. That's all I have to say about the company. And it shows you their trajectory. They have transformed, turned the business around. So,
yeah. And there's been some new energy brought in, I think, by the new CEO as well.
Has been stellar.
Okay. Stock pick.
Tesla.
I'll start with you. Tesla.
Yes, they released their production update and saying that, you know, they've really delivered, not actually produced, delivered 95,200 cars. That's more cars than they've ever delivered, for example, for the whole year in 2015.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is a new record, you know, apart from the one we saw in the fourth quarter of 2018. So this is going in the right direction. This year they expect to release between 300,000 and 600,000 in terms of cars that they're going to manufacture this year. That's a very big margin. And this is more, again, than the 185,000 that they released last year and the whole year. So I'm really excited about this company. No one was expecting this because there's been a lot of teething problems.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're not worried this is like a flash in the pan situation?
No, especially on the Model 3. But yeah. here's the news. Over 80% of the cars that they produce now are the Model 3s. And the Model S and the Model X, they were like 17,982 or whatever, which is, it's not a lot, but there's still demand for these luxury cars. And these cars save the world, and I like them. I like the company, I like the management, and I think there's a lot of upside surprises going forward.
Right. Tesla.
I like to be sure of getting my investment back. I like security of capital at the moment, so I would go for cash or money market fund, but at least without a long sort of deposit period, I think that safety first at the moment is all important. I'm not convinced that this rush we're having at the moment based on very low short-term interest rates is sustainable.
So there you have it, a portfolio of half cash, half risk. You're good to go.
One's cars, one's cash. And not under the mattress, though. In the bank.
Money market.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much to both of you for your time today. My guests, Bright Kumalo from Vestact and Ian Cruikshanks from the SARR. We'll take more of your stock-related questions on Monday. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.
'Tesla.' Yes, they released their production update and saying that they've really delivered, not actually produced, delivered 95,200 cars. That's more cars than they've ever delivered, for example, for the whole year in 2015.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is a new record, apart from the one we saw in the fourth quarter of 2018. So this is going in the right direction. This year they expect to release between 300,000 and 600,000 in terms of cars that they're going to manufacture this year. That's a very big margin. And this is more, again, than the 185,000 that they released last year and the whole year. So I'm really excited about this company. No one was expecting this because there's been a lot of teething problems.
Yeah. I was going to say, you're not worried this is like a flash in the pan situation?
No, especially on the Model 3. But here's the news. Over 80% of the cars that they produce now are the Model 3s. And the Model S and the Model X, they were like 17,000. 982 or whatever, which is, it's not a lot, but there's still demand for these luxury cars, and these cars save the world, and I like them. I like the company, I like the management, and I think there's a lot of upside surprises going forward.
Right. Tesla.
I like to be sure of getting my investment back. I like security of capital at the moment, so I would go for cash or money market fund, but at least without a long sort of deposit period, I think that safety first at the moment is all important. I'm not convinced that this rush we're having at the moment based on very low short-term interest rates is sustainable.
So there you have it, a portfolio of half cash, half risk. You're good to go.
One's cars, one's cash. And not under the mattress, though. In the bank.
Money market.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much to both of you for your time today. My guests, Bright Kumalo from Vestact and Ian Cruikshanks from the SARR. We'll take more of your stock-related questions on Monday. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.